It's 1900 UTC, and that means it's time for That's News to Me. I'm your host, DJ Marcus. Let's see what's happening in the world today.
Oh, hey, welcome, welcome, one and all. It is 1900 UTC in the United States, as I warned you. We went back, so it's an hour earlier local time than it has been for the first half of the year, so that's going to be interesting, which is fun. I've also, excuse me, I've got a new microphone, what did I do? Oh, I bought a headset microphone, like earbud microphone thing, and it's USB-C. So I connected it directly to my MacBook Air, but then I also have a USB-C to Air or Lightning adapter, and then that should allow me to use the same microphone on the phone, the cell phone. So then whenever I'm at work, I'll be able to do the meeting or do the show from the same headset, and it's got a boom mic, so there's no beard noise, and hopefully the little fuzzy on the top will keep this wind noise down. So we'll see what happens. But anyway, welcome, welcome, one and all. Shout out to those in comm already, like the Z-Man Zerohoff, as well as WX Boss and Claudia Wim, Jay LaMoth. Jay LaMoth, of course, if he reminds me all the time, you can always jump in on XMPP if you'd like to hang out. All you need to do is set up your SDF XMPP account, or go get set up wherever you want to have it hosted, and then just go over to conference.jabber.sdf.org. The two rooms I like to hang out in are Anon Radio and SDF, and you can get there. Since this is a new bike, Mike, please let me know if it's too hot or too quiet or any of that, so that I can be sure and get the settings done. But it seems like it's sounding all right, so that's good to hear. All right, well, you're here, we're here, it's time for Death and Destruction, a segment we used to call World News. That's right. All right, let's get in on it. First, Nepal. What? Nepal? There's stuff going on in the world besides all the death and destruction in the Ukraine and in Pakistan or Palestine. You better believe it. Hey, Thrigs here. Welcome, welcome. Nepal earthquake. Loud wails fill a riverside village in western Nepal that was struck by a powerful earthquake last Friday. Grieving survivors have gathered around funeral pyres to send off 13 people who died in the 6.4 magnitude quake. As they grieve their loved ones, survivors in the remote Jajarkot district worry about their future. They've been sleeping outdoors in the cold since the earthquake flattened their homes and are in dire need of aid. Jajarkot in Karnali province was one of the worst hit areas in Friday's earthquake, which left 157 people dead and another 300 wounded. Some of the mourners by the Tuliberi riverbanks cried to the point of fainting and were taken to hospital by ambulance. Of course, this being a BBC story means there is a map. So if you want to check that out, you can go to sdf.org/l/1fe, like iron. So sdf.org/lima/1, like the number one, Foxtrot Echo. sdf.org/l/1fe, all lowercase. And you'll see a map showing where Jajarkot is in relation to India and China and Kathmandu, which is helpful because when you're not a super good at geography person, you need to see these things. At least that's how I feel. So good times there. Oh, shout out to Quentin in the house. Welcome, welcome. Among those cremated was Hari Kami, who had taken a break from his work in India to attend the Tihar Light Festival. His relative said he tried to rescue him from the rubble. He pointed the BBC to the spot where he was found, gasping for life, and asked people not to step on it. People dug for survivors using bowls, plates, and household items. He recalled how the earthquake struck in the middle of the night. Cries gripped the entire village. None of us could think properly. So yeah, it's a real tragic place there, or a tragic event that's unfolded. Unfortunately, most of the world's reserves for humanitarian aid has been spent on bombs. Police say a shooter fired 22 shots into a Cincinnati crowd, killing a boy and wounding five others. What? Mass shooting in the United States? That's unbelievable. Don't worry, there's more than one. The Cincinnati officials are expressing outrage and horror. I don't know if there's much outrage. They might be horrified. At a drive-by shooting that sent more than a score of bullets into a crowd of children, killing an 11-year-old and striking four other children. Police Chief Terry Tietke, it's spelled Tango Hotel Echo Echo Tango Golf Echo. So T-H-E-E-T-G-E. So I don't know if it's G or Thiege, told reporters Sunday that an occupant of a sedan fired 22 rounds in quick succession into a crowd of children just before 9:30 p.m. Friday on the city's west end. A 53-year-old woman was hit, along with the boy who died. Three other boys, aged 12, 13, and 15, a 15-year-old girl, one victim remains hospitalized in stable condition. The mayor called the shooting sickening and unimaginable and said it occurred in a vibrant neighborhood next to a local park. 22 rounds were fired. So, it's troubling for sure, very sad, but not all too uncommon in the United States. Here's something that happened in the U.S. that wasn't particularly a drive-by. Instead, it was a hit-and-run, so vehicles still involved. An Arab Muslim student at Stanford University was hospitalized by a hit-and-run incident that's being investigated as a possible hate crime. Abdul Wahab Omira suffered non-life-threatening injuries after being struck by a black SUV driven by a white male described as having short, dirty blonde hair and a short beard, wearing a gray shirt and round framed glasses. The university says the driver is reported to have made eye contact with the victim, accelerated and struck the victim, and then drove away while shouting, "Fuck you and your people," out the lowered window of the vehicle. The incident involving the student at the Northern California private university has happened against a rise in both Islamophobia and anti-Semitism in the U.S. since the breakout of current conflict between Israel and Hamas, with the White House voicing concern about a rise in hate speech and acts. So, that is... The U.S. is full of stuff, but don't worry. We're not the only place stuff is happening in a sad way. At least 20 people were killed in an attack by Cameroon's Anglophone separatists. That's right. Whether or not we should speak English or French, that's good enough to kill people. The overnight attack occurred in Igbikaw village, western Cameroon, the scene of deadly clashes between rebels and government forces for 7 years. The attack left around 20 dead men, women, and children, and 10 seriously injured people are in hospital. A security forces official and an official from a governmental body also confirmed the attack and provision toll. Cameroon's primarily English-speaking northwest and southwest regions have been gripped by conflict since separatists declared independence in 2017. It followed decades of grievances over perceived discrimination by the Francophone majority. President Paul Biya, 90 years old, who has ruled the Central African nation with an iron fist for 41 years to the day, has resisted calls for wider autonomy and responded with a crackdown. The conflicts claimed more than 6,000 lives and forced more than a million people to flee their homes. Z-Man saying, "Fighting over a language sounds like a Monty Python sketch," but then Jayla Moth reminding us, "Or it could be a Tuesday in Quebec." So, yeah, both the separatists and the government forces have been accused of atrocities in the fighting. Rebels attacked the civilian population, and the provisional toll is 23 dead and 15 houses burnt. So, pretty, you know what, if there's any reason to be different or create out-groups, it seems like it's a good enough reason for us to kill each other. It's a bummer, but that's how the world works, I guess. There's more tragedy and sadness. We're in the Africa section where there's some unfortunate flooding going on. Thousands of people are trapped in flooded areas following heavy rains in Somalia's Jubaland state, the UN's humanitarian agency says. The heavy rains that started last month have elevated water levels on the Juba River, causing flooding in in the areas near the river in the state. There are at least 2,400 people that have been trapped in areas surrounded by water. Efforts by authorities and rescue partners are underway to evacuate the stranded locals. At least 14 people have died, and 47,000 people have been displaced in the flash floods across Somalia since last month. Somalia's information minister said the floods, which also affected two other states, have caused widespread damage. He appealed for support, adding the situation was critical. The Food and Agriculture Organization has warned of high risk of flooding, particularly in the southwest Gedo region. Gedo region, Gedo region. And it's not just Somalia, their neighbor Kenya is also flooding. And oh, this is actually probably useful. Let me pull it up. I'm going to give us all a map of Eastern Africa. Because Eastern Africa, there we go, view file, smaller, there we go, copy image link, put this in com. Okay, if you go to sdf.org/l/1ff, so hey, see you later, Freebird882, thanks for being here while you were. sdf.org/l/1ff, that's lima/1 Firefox. So anyway, sdf.org/l/1ff, all lowercase, all together. That will show you the region we're talking about. As you can see, there's Ethiopia, then Somalia, and then to the south, there's Kenya. So the whole area right there is getting a lot of rain. And so that's helpful to know and understand how they're close together. And that's why we have that Somalia story, and now Kenya is also there with at least 15 dead. People have died in floods caused by torrential rains that hit East Africa, cutting off roads, washing away dozens of houses, and killing livestock. 15,264 households in Kenya have been affected, with 15 reported casualties. So, see what's going on. Jay Lamoth pointing out there's a storm brewing here. Let's see if my power stays on. Oh yeah, that's something I forgot to mention because I was here on time and I'm inside the Airbnb little space. But it was chilly this morning. It's currently 11 degrees, low of 9, and it's been rainy. It's been what I would say is it's not heavy rain. It's just like a drizzle. So it's either not raining or it's like lightly raining. So I went out with just a cloth, like a jersey hoodie, and my wool hat. And I was able to walk to the bus stop, take the bus, go to the post office, and walk back. So I walked maybe a mile in the drizzle, and my hoodie got wet, but my hat didn't get messed up. Anyway, Claudio M pointing out it was cooler here in Miami, which is nice. Also, seeing the sun come up on the way to work was nice. Good, that's really good. Shout outs to Claudio M, who's able to listen to a non-radio before going home. All right. And Thrig says, and that's why only tourists do raincoats and umbrellas in Seattle. It's a helpful thing. All right. Well, there's more death and destruction. Don't worry. At least 45 people were killed at the Al-Maghazi refugee camp. Oh, I said refugee camp and bombing. So you know what that means. Yeah, that's right. Israel went around killing some civilians again. The Hamas-run health ministry says at least 45 people have been killed in what it said was an Israeli airstrike. Israel's military says it's looking into whether it was operating in the area at the time, which is no one else has an air force operating in the area, but we probably weren't there. Anyway, the hospital said, or the head of Gaza's Al-Aqsa Hospital said 52 people were killed in the blast on Saturday night, slightly more than the number given by the health ministry. Residents have been trying to dig with their hands through layers of cement in an attempt to extract those trapped under the rubble. Muhammad Al-Alu, a photojournalist, lost his wife and four of his five children. He'd been reporting elsewhere when the blast happened. It did not occur to me that my children might be buried under the rubble. I wish I'd been there and been killed with them. And that's something as a bit, because I've tried to not do too much about Israel, the Israeli-Palestine issue or Ukraine, because it's just flooding the news. It's like everywhere. So you don't need me to tell you about that. But there was this story that I thought was kind of like, oh, not sure I'm lucky to be alive. Gazans are fearing worse is to come as public health catastrophe looms. The World Health Organization is warning of an imminent public health catastrophe in the Gaza Strip, the displacement of a million people, overcrowding in shelters, and a lack of fuel needed to run sewage, waste, and water have created a perfect storm for the spread of disease. Hi guys, I'm still alive, is how Bissan Auda, 25, starts most of her Instagram reels. But after 16 days of Israeli bombing, the filmmaker told her 665,000 followers, "My biggest fear is not to die, my biggest fear is to live." Oda and her parents are sleeping alongside some 50,000 other people displaced in and around Shifa Hospital. They're among more than 1 million Gazans who have been displaced. So, anyway, yeah, the survivors wish for death. So that's how that's going. But don't worry, there's plenty other death and destruction to go around, like the other mass shooting that happened in the United States I wanted to tell you about. Multiple people, including children as young as 8, have been wounded in a mass shooting during a Prairie View A&M University homecoming event. According to the Waller County Sheriff's Office, on November 5th at around 10 p.m., officers responded to reports of shot fired near the university. Deputies arrived at the scene and discovered that 4 adult females, 2 adult males, and 1 juvenile male had been shot while attending a trail ride pasture party that was being held in conjunction with the Prairie View homecoming party. All victims sustained gunshot wounds to their lower extremities with known life-threatening injuries. An unknown number of actors attending the party were engaged in a verbal dispute when a firearm was discharged several times. The sheriff's office estimates that over 1,000 people attended the event, although security being provided by Waller County Precinct 3 constables. So the police arrived to 2-for-1 mass shooting special. Correct. Good one, Z-Man. Yeah. It's very funny because it's like, huh, yeah, that's sounds about right. This was a 1,000-person event. They'd hired the off-duty police officers. Of course, the police didn't do anything to prevent, you know, it's not like they do anything. But they showed up after the fact to count the wounded and the dead. So that's going on. Now, if you don't have to worry about mass shootings, that's all well and good, because if you're in New Delhi, well, you can't go to school anyway because of the bad pollution. That's right. Let's see. The outdoor playtime of children has been cut to 30 minutes from 2 hours. Classes are all shifted online, and football coaching has been canceled. There are thousands of school children in Delhi whose schedules have abruptly changed due to air pollution rising to alarming levels. Over the past few days, Delhi's Air Quality Index, or AQI, which measures the level of PM2.5, or fine particulate matter in the air, has consistently crossed the 450 mark, nearly 10 times the acceptable limit. Breathing this toxic air is akin to smoking 25 to 30 cigarettes a day. Things are so bad that Delhi's Environment Minister Gopal Rai has asked all schools to remain shut until Friday, with offline classes only for high schoolers. This isn't the first time air pollution has disrupted learning in Delhi. It's been happening every winter over the past 4 or 5 years. In fact, the number of days schools are shut due to extreme air pollution has been increasing. Now classes are disrupted for at least 5 to 6 days at a stretch. Parents and experts are concerned about the effect of these abrupt breaks in learning and daily routines with children, especially when schedules have just gotten back to normal after the COVID-19 pandemic. So yeah, Thrigg pointing out London used to have toxic smog like that. Yeah, it's, I think every country as it's been developed, every country has different events where it's like horrible pollution like this happens. But we're in a day and time where it's just keeps getting worse. And it's not when it happens in one place and it can get blown across to another place, everything's fine. Let's see. Havoc in the house. Welcome, welcome. Writing EDA tools is hard. I don't know what EDA is, so I hope it is not related to New Delhi. Hey, Pizza Pal's in the house. Just in time for the food news. Welcome, welcome. Tyson Foods recalls U.S. nuggets after metal pieces found. That's right, American meat processor Tyson Foods, known for its horrible condition of the animals it raises for food, says it's recalling around 30,000 pounds or 13,608 kilograms of chicken nuggets after metal pieces were found in the product. And these are in the dino chicken nuggets, which is extra bad because that's the one the kids like. The firm said the voluntary recall is out of an abundance of caution. The nuggets were produced at one facility and shipped to distributors in 9 states, including Alabama, California, and Illinois. U.S. Food Safety and Inspection Service said it had received one report of a minor oral injury. The FSIS said that anyone concerned about an injury or illness should contact a healthcare provider. The dinosaur-shaped fun nuggets affected by the recall have a use-by date of September 4, 2024. Tyson added that customers who had purchased the product should discard it and contact the firm. It's not the first time this has happened. Last year in November, the firm recalled ground beef after finding pieces of mirror-like material in the meat. In 2019, the company recalled a batch of its chicken nuggets after consumers found pieces of blue rubber inside. That same year, it recalled millions of pounds of chicken strips, following concerns they might be contaminated with metal. And finally, in 2022, Tyson shut a number of chicken processing plants in the U.S. due to a slump in demand. So yeah, dino revenge, Andy C. pointing out. Welcome. So that's not the only food-related problem. More fruit pouches for kids are being recalled because of illnesses linked to lead. That's right. We need to dumb down our children one way or another, and lead's the best way to do it. Federal health officials are expanding an investigation into potentially lead-tainted pouches of apple cinnamon fruit puree marketed for children amid reports of more illness and additional product recalls. So that's let's see if we get the name of the product here. Two new companies, Schnucks Markets of St. Louis and Weiss Markets of Sunbury, Pennsylvania, announced recalls of Wana Bana or Coral Gate of Cabral, Florida's may contain high levels of lead. Wana Bana of Coral Gables, Florida, previously recalled all lots of expiration dates of its apple cinnamon fruit puree. So if you've got any kids with apple fruit cinnamon puree snack pouches, you might want to check. I'd like to go ahead and take this time to remind you guys that it's 1922 UTC, which means in 7 minutes and some change, we've got the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe, a fun show that airs every goddamn day right here on and on radio at 1930 UTC. That's right, 1930 UTC. No matter when you are in the universe, where you are in the universe, if you hear Tobe's voice, it's probably 1930 UTC here on planet Earth. And no matter what ailments you may have, however serious or unserious they are, there are dubious claims to be made. And you can for sure count if you're missing a toe or if you've got a toenail that's ingrown, maybe you've got a fingernail that's missing. Any minor ailment, all you got to do is listen to the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe every day, every goddamn day, and eventually it will grow back. So you want to do that. So every goddamn day. Thrig pointing out lead is also good for aqueducts, and Andy Say saying you need to just market these things properly. Oh, I meant to mention this because lead leads into this next story. Four men are charged over the Blenheim Palace gold toilet theft. That's right, turning lead into gold. Four men have been charged over the theft of an 18-karat gold toilet. The $5 million lavatory was stolen from the stately home in Oxfordshire shortly before 5 a.m. on September 14, 2019. Michael Jones, 38, not Michael Jones, who's well-known for his rap songs, but Michael Jones, 38, of Oxford, and James Sheen, 39, face burglary charges. Fred Doe, 35, and Bora Gukuk, G-U-C-C-U-K, Gukuk, 39, from London, are accused of conspiring to transfer criminal property. They're due to appear before Oxford magistrates on November 28th. Mr. Sheen from Wellingborough in Northamptonshire is additionally charged with transferring criminal property and conspiracy to do the same. Why wouldn't you just melt it down? The toilet was part of an expedition by Italian conceptual artist Maurizio Catalan and was valued at $6 million. The loo, which could be used for its intended purposes, with a 3-minute time limit to avoid queues, had only been on show for 2 days when it was stolen. as it was plumbed in at the time. The heist caused flooding and damages to the 18th century stately home. The palace is a UNESCO World Heritage Site and the birthplace of Winston Churchill. Debbie and Potato running on Potato. Oh, well, we'll keep on rolling while we talk about that other stuff. Oh, we've got a couple of other pieces of news while we've got 5 minutes to go. A Parkinson's patient was able to walk 6 kilometers without problems after a spinal implant. The first patient to receive a spinal implant to treat advanced Parkinson's disease has described experiencing a rebirth after the treatment allowed him to walk again without falling over. Mark, 63, from Bordeaux, France, was diagnosed with the disease more than 20 years ago and had developed severe mobility problems, including balance impairments and a freezing of gait. After receiving the implant, which aims to restore normal signaling to the leg muscles from the spine, he's been able to walk more normally and regained his independence. I practically could not walk anymore without falling frequently, several times a day. In some situations, such as entering a lift, I'd trample on the spot. I'd trample on the spot as though I was frozen there. You might say. He said, right now, I'm not even afraid to use the stairs anymore. Every Sunday I go to the lake and I walk around 6 kilometers. It's incredible. So very cool. I thought this was neat and it could give people hope because it's not always terrible. Of course, people are pretty terrible still. A woman was forced to withdraw from Sunday's New York Marathon over security concerns over a vest carrying supplies for her stoma. That's right, she's got like a colostomy bag and she's not allowed to run in the marathon. She needs hydration, nutrition, and medical supplies to maintain her health and safety while running following endometrius injuries. But the GP told the Independent she was forced to cancel the trip due to concerns over her stoma supplies and medical equipment failing to be resolved by the New York Marathon team. The run, which operates on a ballot system, was drawn in March this year, at which point Miss Redmond began making preparations. I contacted them immediately, she said. First, I was told there is no exceptions to the rule against run belts. Then I contacted the CEO and was put in touch with inclusion teams. So, yeah. That's how that goes. So she won't get to go. There's so much more news in the world. We just can't get to it all, but that's okay. The Dubious Goals Committee is coming up in 3 minutes, and I'll be back tomorrow on Tuesday, November the 7th. So, again, today's Monday, November the 6th, 2023, and it's about to be 19:30 UTC. So here's the last bit of news for you. Sanctions on the transport of products through Russian territory have not restricted Kazatomprom's activities. The company said it in its quarterly update, and production remains in line with plans. Separately, Kazatomprom shareholders have approved a major sale of natural uranium concentrates to China's state nuclear uranium resource development company. So, good news there for nuclear power and fuel being available on the market. And Doosan inability to design used fuel storage system. South Korean engineering firm Doosan inability has signed a contract with Korea Hydro and Nuclear Power to carry out the overall design of a used nuclear fuel dry storage system. Hey, Jeff's in the house. Welcome, welcome. Calm is a good place. It's a fun time. What else is going on? The U.S. sent a nuclear submarine to hang out in the Gulf, in the water near Palestine and Israel. And the Pakistani Prime Minister is appalled by Israel Minister's Gaza nuclear option comment. The Foreign Office said on Monday that Pakistan was appalled at the remark made by an Israeli minister, where he suggested just dropping a nuclear bomb on Gaza. So, of course, we won't go into that more, but pretty frustrating, kind of a surprise. And the Space Force has taken over a missile warning ground stations that were previously run by the Navy, or excuse me, by the Army. Ugh. We don't have time to go through the rest of it, but please stick around for the Dubious Goals Committee. It's a fun show, and like I said, it's every goddamn day right here on I'm Not Ready.
Well, that sound means that our time's come to an end. Thanks for listening. I'll be back tomorrow and every weekday, Monday through Friday,